Let's have an AA meeting.
Let's have one.
My name is Isla. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Isla.
I am so grateful to be sober today. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. It was about 18 months ago, I guess, that I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I think, oh, Lord, I'm a goner, blah, blah, blah. So I didn't tell anybody for a couple of days, and then so we were doing parking lot. You know, we always have a meeting in the parking lot before and after meetings, right? So we were doing that on Zoom, and one of the gentlemen in the crowd said, my wife isn't feeling well, and I have 2 tickets that I would like to sell for Elton John. Well, I love Elton John, right? And since I'm going to die anyway, money is no object. But I had one stipulation. I said, yes, I'll buy them if John LaSalle will be my date. And John agreed. And that was awesome. And we were there and after the concert, but we're leaving that Mercedes place and it's, you know, it's huge. And I took a step or two and my knee went out. And it was the most painful thing in the world. Long story, I'm getting to the point. I got the first wheelchair that I've ever been in before or since. His part of his job was to pick me up and we went on Marty. But even though I had wheelchairs, it was still like a mile and a half or something crazy to get to the Marty. And man, were we a pair. But the thing that is so very, very impressive is, now I knew that John had long-term sobriety. I knew that he was one of the coolest people I've ever known. What really, really, really was the most impressive thing, John never once expressed any signal of being agitated, of being irritable, of being put out. He was just kind and gentle. And I tell you, John, you are a hero of mine and a wonderful friend and mentor. So I give you John LaSalle.
That was really cool. My name is John LaSalle, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
And a really swell guy, as you just heard. Thank you for that introduction, Isla. My sponsor told me that my sobriety date is April 22nd, 1982. Woo. You have a problem there? What the hell? Take your own damn inventory. Hey. Anyway, and I put it that way, my sponsor told me, because I didn't have a clue. I thought I was really kind of a sick puppy when I came in. I'm sure none of you can identify with being a sick puppy when you came in. But I thought I'd come in on a Sunday. And he said, no, you came in 4 days earlier. You came in on a Thursday. And I said, well, how the hell do you know that? And it seemed that I had gone to my first meeting, and it was in his apartment. This was on the island of Maui, where I got sober in wonderful Lahaina. I've still got friends there, but Lahaina is no more. The place where I got sober is no more. And that's kind of a sad thing, but sobriety lives. Maui no ka'oi. That Maui is the best, let me tell you. They all got together after that in the spirit of love and aloha. But in any event, my first meeting was at his house, and he kept a diary. And in the diary, he said, new fellow named John came in today, and it was April 22nd, Thursday. So that's how I knew I had been sober that long. And I'll tell you what, I don't know about anybody else, but when I first came in, I would hear people who were talking about how they had a year sobriety, and they'd be all grinning and happy, and I'm thinking, what a butthead. That's over a year, you're smoking dope. You're doing Pacalolo and the weeds. What do you tell me? And no way anybody could have a year of sobriety, a year away from a drink. Not if you drank like me, by God, you sissy. And then there'd be somebody who said, I got 5 years. I'd say, yeah, what'd you do? Get a little tipsy on New Year's Eve? Puke. And then there'd be somebody with my time, this amount of time, and I'd be like, what, that old fart's got nothing better to do. And he had a life. So he comes to these stupid meetings, and I'll bet he doesn't even remember what it was like to drink, for crying out loud. Well, I'm here to tell you something. When we read how it works before every meeting, there's a lot of important things in there. You can get a lot of meetings just out of how it works if we're actually listening. But there's one sentence there that says, we remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. And for me, the most important word is not alcohol. It's not cunning, it's not baffling, it's not powerful. For me, and me only, the most important word is remember. Remember what it was like. If you drank like I did, and you're probably here for a good reason, my mind took me places that I didn't want to go. And I don't want to go back there. So I remember. And telling my story is one way where I remember where I come from. I know I heard a lot of people say, well, if I drink, I'll die. And I said, well, that's not so bad. What if I lived? What if I lived the way I was living when I first came in? I don't want that. There's lots of things worse than dying or going to jail. When we had the convention here, international convention, I was there, I did some volunteer work for it, and we had a guy speak who was serving a sentence, I think it was 8 year sentence, and they let him out. He had been in a heavier security prison, but then they transferred him to minimum security, and they allowed him to come out to give a talk, and we all thought, man, this is cool. This dude is giving a talk, he's in prison, and he's giving us a talk. What we forgot was, he is what he had to live with. He killed somebody. He didn't go to jail just for DUIs. He killed somebody. So anybody who's sitting here thinking, this thing is a bunch of crap, you don't know if you're going to get back. You might live. How about if you kill somebody? You want to live with that? I don't want to, so I remember. I'll go through my childhood as quickly as I can. There's nothing like sitting in an A meeting, and it gets out to be 10 minutes to 9, and a person that still isn't out of the third grade yet. So let me run through my childhood for you. I had one. There you go. I had a childhood. So now, when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, like many of the people here I know, I always felt that I was missing a gene. I knew that everybody else, all my friends, they knew how to handle life. I didn't realize they were doing on-the-job training like I was too, but But I thought they just were all self-assured. They knew how to handle things. And I didn't, because I was missing that gene. And then sometime in high school, I was a late bloomer. I didn't start drinking until I was about 16. And I was going to parties, and I had my first drink. And, you know, we talk about selfishness and self-centered in our meetings. And here's how what my self-centeredness was like. My interest in you was, what do you think of me? That's my interest in you. It's, hi, how are you doing? I don't even want to hear how you're doing. What do you think I'm doing? You know, if you're a guy, do you think I'm funny? You want to hang out with me? If you're a girl, do you think I'm cute? You want to go out with me? You want to date me? You know, so I went to that party, and I had my first drink. Whoosh, mama, that was bitching. Went right through me, right through to my toes. Now, I'm telling you, people say you can't feel in your fingernails. Oh, bet me, yes you can. Back then I had hair. I could feel it in my hair. And you know what? I knew right away that I knew how to handle life. And I knew the guys liked me. And I knew the girls thought I was hot. And they wanted to date me. Unfortunately, I got really drunk, threw up, and passed out before I got close to any of the girls. But I knew they liked me, and they wanted to go out with me. Now, to this day, and that's been many, many years ago, I still don't know if the girls knew that. But I knew it. Who cared if the girls knew they liked me? I knew they liked me. So that's what alcohol did for me at first. And I was, you know, I didn't drink every night for a while, simply because I couldn't do it. I was in high school, and this was Southern California. I was unaware if they had bootleggers there. I know here in the South they talk about it, but in Southern California I didn't know about it. So I would drink at parties. Every time I went to a party, I got blitzed, and I got drunk right away, and I would pass out right away. I got used to passing out. I got used to blackouts, all that sort of thing. I'll never forget one time I was sitting around in my first few weeks of sobriety, and I had nothing better to do than take my brain out and play with it. You know when you're new, you're just, your mind is going 1,000 miles an hour, thinking of all these thoughts, all of them negative. And I started thinking about the different types of blackouts that I had. Now, I don't know who in the world wants to sit around and think of the different blackouts, but I did. I thought I'd categorize them, because, hell, I was an intellectual man. I did crossword puzzles, so, shoot, I'm smarter than you. Don't check my inventory. So, I was thinking about the different kinds of blackouts that I had, and I would have the linear blackout. That's the one where you start drinking, you drink, go up to about midnight, 2 in the morning, boom, that's it, you blacked out. Linear, straightforward blackout. Then I had the movable blackout, or the brownouts, or whatever. That's where you would be drinking, all of a sudden you black out and wake up in conversation with a total stranger, never knowing where the hell you are. And you know, the thing about that that's so frightening is, I never knew what the conversation was about. Apparently the other person's having a great time. And my first thought was, whose turn is it to talk? Please let it be your turn, because I don't, no clue to what the hell I'm talking about. So that was the other type of blackout. Then I had the time warp, and I think many of you have had that. That's where you black out, you wake up, and it's 6 o'clock. Which 6 o'clock is it? Is it 6 a.m.? Last thing I remember, it was 4, and I was bombed, and I've been doing Bakalulu, and I'm bombed, and no one's at 6 o'clock. Is it time for me to go to work? Is it 6 p.m., and I missed work? Holy crap. Those were terrible. And then there was one that always used to get me. It was, I used to call it the retrograde blackout. Retrograde blackout. And that is, I can remember one time when I was tending bar for about 20 years or So I attended bar as a drinking bartender. In the first 8 years of my sobriety, I still attended bar. I don't recommend that. If you haven't done it, don't pick it up. That's a dumb thing to do. But I did it because that's all I'd known for 20 some odd years. So I did it for the first 8 years of my sobriety. But this retrograde thing was tight. I can remember when I was working a day shift and I'd get off at 6 o'clock, and I wasn't drinking that particular job, on the job. I did it others, but not that one. And this, the autonomy occurred to me, well, when I get off, after I count my money, I'm going to walk down the street in L.A., and you can walk down the street, and there's two more bars right in front of you, you know. So I'm going to walk down the street, go to so-and-so's bar, have a couple of pops, and then go home. Oh, yeah, a couple of pops, sure. So I went in there. So that's the last thing I remember. I don't remember closing the place. I didn't drink. And I knew when I came to later on, I knew that I had counted my money, dropped it in the safe, walked down the street, ordered a scotch on the rocks, had another one because that tasted good. But I didn't remember any of that. I blacked out. It was like I'd had a concussion. I had blacked out back to the point when it was 5 in the afternoon. And that's what I call a retrograde blackout. I used to get all those sorts of things. It's kind of neat not having them. A lot of things that are neat that I don't have anymore. In any event, I'll try to get forward as quickly as I can, go through my drunk-a-log and get into maybe some recovery. We'll see. I don't know what the hell I'm going to say. I'm going to say something. But, I did a bar for quite some time. One of the things about Alcoholics Anonymous, if you read the big book, there's that chapter, More About Alcoholism. That is so cool. Because everything in it, if you're an alcoholic, makes sense. And it makes sense because you're nuts. Because that stuff is nuts. That's the insanity. I hear a lot of people say, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I wasn't crazy. Oh, really? What was your attitude about liquor? In the More About Alcoholism, it says, we switched from scotch to brandy. We drank only natural wines. We drank beer only. We drank only at home. We never drank at home. Who the... You show me any regular, normal drinker that does any of that. I remember one time when I was in my early 20s, you know, Reader's Digest, I don't know if they still do it. I don't even know if Reader's Digest is still around, is it? Okay, cool. Condensed books, mention. Anyway, Reader's Digest had one of those, I think it came from AA. It was one of those 20 questions. You answer, if you answer three or four of them in the positive, there's a good chance you've got a problem with alcohol. Well, I took that in my early 20s, and I answered something like 18 or 19 of them. And I took it honestly, took it in the positive. And I hadn't been to any institutions yet, hadn't been busted at that point. So there were a couple of them. But the others I answered yes to. And I came to the only true, logical, intelligent idea that an insane person would. That test was flawed. My God, everything they put down was normal drinking. What are they talking about? I hung out with people just like me. I was in the bar, so everybody, and particularly the bars that I hung out in, people were like me. We used to laugh about stuff about coming home and then going out to see where the car was parked. You know, that bravado. It was a bravado because it was bullshit. But I would wake up in the morning and I'd go out. And I looked to see, did I park the car in the street? Did I park it on the curb? Is it up on the lawn? And then I'd walk around it. That walking around the car when you don't remember driving home, seeing if there are dents or blood on it. And then you know what? We'd all laugh. There wasn't any, but that wasn't funny. And I don't miss that at all. I know where my car is now. Well, unless I have to go to some big market or something, then I can't remember where the hell I parked my car. I just figured, gotta be here someplace. I'll just wait until everybody leaves. That's about it. But you know, that's that's the way it was. And one other thing that I'm going to relate, I was married 3 times, came close on a couple of other occasions. And but interestingly enough, everybody I met at a bar. That's really, they all, most of them pretty much drank the way I did. Kind of odd. But there they go, when you're hanging out in a bar, who are you going to hang out with? People who drink like you. At least the kind of bars I went to. And you know, you talk about different types of insanity. I just got to bring this up. I have no idea why. But there was this one girlfriend I had, and she was nuts. She was nuts. Most of the marriages I had were somewhat contentious. This young lady was contentious. And we're at the bar one time, and she's down, sitting at the halfway down and the bar, and I'm tending bar, and this guy comes in with his mother. He's coming in with his mother, right? So I say, how you doing? He says, oh, hi, how are you doing? This is great. And we're talking, and I'm having a good time meeting this guy's mother that he's brought in to meet me. What a nice guy. And all of a sudden, I hear this crash behind me, and I look back, and my good friend Vera has thrown an ashtray at me, and it missed me, and it broke some glasses. So the guy just looks at me, what's that? And I just said, oh, it's Vera, don't worry about it. And I cleaned up, and I went down, and I said, what'd you do that for? She said, because you're not paying attention to me, and you're talking to that woman. And I said, that's the guy's mother. I just met her. She said, I don't care. Not paying attention. So with that, I picked up everything around her, took her drink away, everything else, no ashes, ashtrays, nothing that she could use. Well, the night went on. She just sat there on her little fanny, simmering and simmering. And so I go to lock up, and people are out. She's still sitting there. She was going to close up with me. So I went, I locked the front door. As I walked back in, she reached over the bar. She grabs an ice pick. Now, this is the insanity of what it's like to be an alcoholic, particularly in a contentious relationship. She comes at me with this ice pick. So I'm standing there, so I grabbed her wrist. I was there quick enough to grab her wrist. And I squeezed, and she dropped the ice pick. Then I turned her around, and I very nicely went to the front door, shoved her out the front door, landed on her little butt, I think, and locked the door real fast. Went around back. Next day, we're back together. We're laughing. Of course we're back together. We're in a relationship. Come on. So we're back together, and she points at her wrist, and it's got some bruises on it, where it squeezes. She says, look what you did to my wrist. Look what you did. And I said, well, you're coming at me with an ice pick. And she said, oh, okay. And then I asked her what I thought was a penetrating question. I said, why did you come at me with the ice pick anyway? And the answer she gave was, I thought it was a knife. Do you think that's weird? I accepted that answer. Okay, okay, yeah. You thought it was a knife. Why not? Now, there is one thing to be said about contentious relationships. Why do people like me stay in contentious relationships so long as they're not, well, so long as you don't get jabbed with the ice pick itself? Why do you stay in a contentious relationship? You ought to know this, because making up is bitching, man. Making up is smoking. That next, oh, yeah. You want to take my inventory, honey? I'll do that. So one last story about the insanity, because I don't want to go into it too much. God, I'm glad I can see the clock, because I don't know about you folks, but my attention span is about as good as the quality of my butt when I'm sitting out there. When it starts bugging me, then it's time to end. So I'm standing up, you're not, so I'll try and end so your butts don't hurt you too much. Oh, there was one last, with my third wife, a friend of mine had been sober for 8 years in AA. He was a part-time bartender where I worked. I was a head bartender. He used to help me out at lunch. And my wife and I went over to his house one time to have dinner with he and his wife. So we're sitting around, and for some reason, my wife and this guy go off and decide to start talking. So I'm sitting there talking to this dude's wife, and we're having a good time. So two of them come back, and they're both crying, my wife and this guy. Wow, what are you crying about? What's going on? And he says, John, your wife's an alcoholic. Holy crap. I'm married to a damn wino. She's going to be down at 3rd and Main in downtown L.A. sucking on wine from a brown paper bag. Did I think of her? Think, oh, she's in trouble? I thought about me. I'm going to be married to that. But then, once again, being brilliant, I had this brilliant thought. I asked him, well, what makes you think she's an alcoholic? Pretty good question, I think. And he said, well, did you know that when she takes a shower, she takes a glass of wine and puts it on top of the toilet tank to drink from it while she's showering? And I said, yeah. Why wouldn't I know? I was married to her. And it seemed like a normal thing to me. She's taking a glass of wine, taking a shower, got on the toilet tank. In fact, I could be a nice guy. Yeah, some things were weird, but I could be a sympathetic husband. So there were times when I would stick my head in the bathroom and I'd say, honey, you want to refill on your wine? And she said, yes, I'd refill it for her. That was nice. The only difference was, I usually took a glass of scotch and put it on the top of the toilet tank. And that was perfectly normal. Well, you know what? When you're sober, and you've been sober a while, you think, that's insane. So if you're wondering if you're insane, and if you identify with any of that, you're in the right place. Stay right here. One piece of advice, well, there's a couple that I'm going to give. You can ignore all of them. But one piece of advice I'm going to give, you know, we're often told, keep coming back. And that's good advice. I think better advice is stay here. Stay right where you are. Take a chair, any chair. Take that chair and watch the parade. Watch the parade of people come and people go and find out how little you know and how helpless we are. Look at people who come in and it looks like they're doing the steps and they're doing great. And they got a sponsor and all of a sudden one day they're drunk and you wonder, how did that happen? They were great. And then you're still sitting in that chair and you see somebody else and the person's a total crap head and you don't like them. You don't like anything about them. But you know what? They stay sober year after year and they're sponsoring people and getting better. And why? I can't say why. Who am I to know? I don't know. I don't know how people stay sober. I don't know how they get drunk. I just know it ain't me. And I've got my chair, and I'm watching that parade. So at any event, I came in here in 1982, and the way I came in was a girlfriend that I'd gone over to Maui with. I was out of the third marriage already, and she called the cops on me. See, what happened in the last few years of my drinking, I never knew which John was going to show up. Several Johns could show up. Was I going to be the funny guy? And I could be. You know, I knew a lot of jokes. As a bartender, I could stand there for 8 hours, tell joke after joke. Pick a topic. I could have told you a joke about it, being center of attention. And that's where I was, center of attention. I wanted you to like me, but I didn't know any other way to do it except to tell jokes. But anyway, I could be that guy, or I could be John, the pain in the ass, which was the same guy trying to tell jokes, but I'm nudging. Hey, what do you think of that? What do you think of that? I can remember going out to dinner with my third wife, and there was a couple sitting across from us at another table. I didn't even know them. And I started talking to them, telling jokes, because I knew they wanted to hear my stuff. No, they didn't. But I was just being a pain in the ass. So I could be funny. I could be a pain in the ass. I could be the maudlin drunk, where I'm crying, pitying myself. You know, I grew up basically, I went to high school in the 50s. Oh my God. That was back when we had papyrus to write on, stuff like that. But then I was a child of the 60s, of course, and I joined every group you could because I was going to save the world. And I get into one of those maudlin things where I start crying because, oh, I've tried to do everything in the world to save the world, and look, it's still messed up. Don't you feel sorry for me? Nobody wants to be around that. Nobody. I don't, unless it's me, but I don't want to be around it. Or I could be a red-out drunk, and that is, I don't know if any of you have done this, but I could blow my top over something really small, and suddenly I'd see red. And if you've ever done it, that's a dangerous time. Because look at me, I'm not big. I'm not John Wayne, and trust me, I'm not Bruce Lee. But if I'm in a red-out, I don't feel stuff. And you can be very dangerous, because you do things that nobody even expects you to do. And apparently what I had done with her, I don't know what happened, spilled a drink, something like that. Apparently I started throwing stuff around the apartment. Thank God I didn't do anything else, didn't touch her or anything. But she called the cops on me. And that to me was a great 12-step, because that was the first thing that I came to. I came out of my blackout, there's all these big Hawaiian dudes at the door, all in blue, and they're there for me. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, I'm 43 years old. And I had never considered that before. Now, I don't mean to tell you that I've been in a 25, 30-year blackout. No, I knew when I turned 25, when I turned 30, when I turned 40. But in the back of my mind, I was still that 16-year-old kid that the Brothers of the Holy Cross said, you got great potential. You can do just about anything you want to. Even though I was knew that I was 25 and 30 and 40, in the back of my mind, I'm going to straighten out next week. So I wasn't really conceding that I was getting older. I'd say, yeah, today's my 42nd birthday. Can we figure that? But no. In the back of my mind, I'm going to straighten out next week. Next week, I'll get a different job. Next week, I'll go back to school. Next week, I'll get rid of this wife. Next week, I'll get married. Next week, all of a sudden, I see all those cops at the door. That was next week. And I knew inside I was 43 years old. So then I came to my first meeting. Don't remember much about the first meeting, except one thing. Obviously, I didn't remember the day. But one thing I remember, this tall dude, he was 6'4". His name was Paul. Had that salt and pepper gray hair that I always thought was so cool. And this is on Maui. He came up to me, put out his hand, shook it, and says, hi, I'm Paul. I'm glad you're here. And that was incredible, because I wasn't glad to be there. And I didn't want anybody to come up to me, because I couldn't stand myself. I was the worst person in the world. We used to have a saying over there, lower in whale shit. And that's how I felt. I was lower in whale shit. Son of a gun. He came up, and I figured, he's so good looking like this, and he's tan, and it's Maui, and everything. I figured he was somebody like Ted Turner, that he had a yacht anchored off in the harbor or something like that. After I got to know Paul, I found out, no, he spent several years in Honolulu State Prison. He wasn't no Ted Turner. But you know what? I do remember that he shook my hand, and that has stood with me ever since. You know, we have this saying in here, the responsibility. Whenever anyone anywhere holds out their hand for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I am responsible. And that's one thing that I've continued to do as long as I've been sober. Whenever I go to a meeting, I don't care if it's a newcomer, but I hold out my hand to anybody. You never know. Not just the newcomer will feel welcome, but maybe that old-timer isn't feeling too good. Maybe he or she is feeling down. Say hi and welcome him. That's all you got to do. And son of a gun, it works for you. You know, there's an awful lot that I can go through, but I'm just going to tell you a couple of quick things so we can get out of here at 10 minutes of. God, time flies when I'm listening to myself. Damn. God, you're good, John. Anyway, a couple of things that I wanted to mention to you is holding out my hand for the hand of AA always to be there. When I was about 3 years sober, somebody told me, the puke, told me that there was some government program that if you were a recovering alcoholic, you could go to it and they give you money for being a recovering alcoholic. Cool, man. I want something for nothing. I'm sober. Gimme. You know, it's like I'm old. Gimme. I'm sober. Gimme. I had not realized at that point that being sober is its own reward. However, so I just figured, well, I'm going to find out where you get money for being a sober alcoholic. So I tried all sorts of different government agencies, Social Security, and everything else. Finally, I decided on the Department of Human, not the Department of Human Resources, the unemployment. I go down to the unemployment office, see if they got it. So I go up to the desk, and this lady is there, and so I explain to her what I want. She says, gee, I don't know anything like that. Let me call you so-and-so. She's in the back. She's been here a long time. So this lady comes up. She takes me back to her desk. We sit down. She says, how can I help you? So I told her that, you know, I'm sober. Give me money. And she said, oh, I can't help you. And then, you know what? I sat there, and we talked for 45 minutes. Well, she helped me. Keep in mind, I have the mind that I know everything about you when I meet you. I'm always wrong, but by God, I'm never in doubt. And I knew that she was a government worker, hated her job, she was lousy at it, didn't know how to do it. And for 45 minutes, I sat there talking one human being to a nice human being, talking about what it was like to raise kids, what it was like having a paycheck to paycheck, and that sort of thing. And I came to find out that here's this government worker that I knew nothing about. She was sweet. She loved her job. She wanted to help people to the best she possibly could. And she helped me for 45 minutes to open up my mind a little bit. And finally, she asked me just one question. She said, how long has it been since you've had a drink? And I said, oh, about 3 years. She got this big smile. The whole room lit up. At least it was, felt that way for me. And she said, oh, you're not handicapped. And I just thought, oh my God. She's right. I haven't had a drink. I'm not handicapped. And that's the way we are. We haven't had a drink today. We're not handicapped. Two things I want to leave with. On my first anniversary, I mentioned, shared this with Lee coming over. On my first anniversary, an old timer gave me a birthday card, and in it he wrote what I think is some of the best advice I've ever heard. Don't believe your own bullshit. And by golly, that's what I've lived by for almost 42 years now. And one thing, so this is the last. Okay, so I'm not over. Talk shit. So, there used to be a guy at Clarkston when I first moved here from Maui years ago. He'd come in and say, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink today. And that gives me a chance to have a chance. So you don't take a drink. You got a chance. Take a drink. I don't know if you'll ever get back. Thanks.
Told ya. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very much.